The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey there, welcome to The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. So nice to be with you for this 16th episode of the podcast. My guest this week is just one of those people who makes the world around him a much better place. Nathaniel Mata spent most of his life in Texas, but he was born in the Bay Area and grew up a massive Sharks fan. He really wasn't able to play much of the organized sport, though, because the cost was prohibitive, as we know. When he got older, he wanted people in his community in McAllen, Texas, to experience the joys of the game without the barriers of cost or of ice. And that's when RGV Roller was born. It's inline and roller hockey for anyone, regardless of age, gender, background, or skill level. Nate was one of this year's inaugural recipients of the Herb Carnegie Trailblazer Awards, and most deservedly so. Here is Nate's story.
Nate, it's so nice to meet you virtually. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's great to be here with you. Thank you so much for having me.
I've been hearing so much about you over the last little while. And I guess what surprised me the most is you're actually a Bay Area kid. So I'm going to start there since this is a Sharks podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me about your history in the Bay.
Yeah. I was born in San Jose. My mom's from San Francisco. My dad is from the area I live here now in Texas. I had an uncle, so his brother went to Stanford. He got into a motorcycle accident. My dad went to go live with him. My parents met. I was born there, and then it's really expensive, and we moved down here. In my 5-6 years in the Bay Area in San Jose, I played a little bit of ice hockey, and I've been a Sharks fan ever since. And hockey's been a huge part of my life ever since. So yeah, it's the sport means a lot to me, but the Bay Area, I love it. I visit every couple of years. I still have an uncle and a grandmother there. So yeah, I'm from the Bay Area, and I still rep the teal all the time, like all the time.
And you were a Marlo fan. That's my understanding. Is that true?
Yes. Huge Marlo fan. I felt like we were connected. I think he was drafted in 97. I was born in 95. So my whole watching was, he was a big part of it. So yeah, big Marlo fan. Hurdle. My first jersey was Mike Ricci, and I understand he's still with the team. So
he is,
it's a big family over there. It's really good. Tough years now, but I mean, I'm diehard. Like give me the draft pick talk. I'll listen to it. Like I'm all about it.
I don't want to hope too hard. It's like it's too stressful. I can't do it.
I know. I know.
But yeah, I mean, listen, I moved here in August, and this really was my first major, you know, hockey experience outside of Canada. I spent the last 8 years touring Canada. So it's an incredible fan base and a very loyal fan base. And wow, did they ever have a lot of success, you know, like they're kind of spoiled. So I think that's why it's so hard right now watching this happen.
Yeah, no, people haven't really ever had to experience like those rough years except in the beginning. And I wasn't born yet. So luckily when I started watching them in like the mid 2000s, they were already like a really solid cup contender team. But you know, you need to go through the rain if you want the rainbow or something like that. So we'll be okay. and I do like to tell people, I did start to really enjoy hockey when I was able to watch more teams and enjoy the league at full. I mean, I'm always going to be a Sharks fan, but now I watch, you know, prospects, young players, you know, I'm just into the sport overall. So, the Sharks got me started, but now I'm just like a hockey nut. I listen to, you know, 32 Thoughts on my drive and, you know, too many men. I listen to so much hockey. It's ridiculous. But yeah.
Well, it's fun, and we know it's a whole world. And you're really helping to grow that world and kind of expand that world. When you were in the Bay Area and you played hockey a little bit, which is what you just referenced, is it because there are so many financial constraints to the game? I mean, it's just not affordable for most people, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So when I moved to Texas, I thought there would be no hockey. Sure enough, a minor league team comes a couple years later and they have a youth program and I'm super excited. I tell my parents to put me in there and they look at the price and they're like, I don't think you can keep playing hockey. They told me to play baseball or basketball or any other sport. And I did, while continuing to play the hockey video games and keep up with the Sharks and be a fan. But there was always this like distance between me and being a participant and being a fan. It was two different things. I played street hockey, you know, I did all of that. It was finances, right? I mean, I was an only child when I played in San Jose, and I had a little brother and a little sister, and they couldn't put all of the money on one kid's one sport. So, I mean, I appreciate, you know, my upbringing. I wish I was able to play, but I understand it's a reality for a lot of families that ice hockey, at any level, especially if you're on a high level, a travel team, a elite team, it's like, come on, I look at this thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm an adult, I know the value of the dollar. And it's like, yeah, this is nuts. So I found roller hockey, eventually, but I think it's a really sweet spot, but it's tough. Ice hockey, it's just something that not a lot of people can get into. The people that can, you know, bless them, but you know, where we're at, ice doesn't freeze over in the winter. You can't just play it as a winter sport. It has to be frozen for thousands of dollars. So yeah, right. It's tough, and finances had a lot to do with why I didn't play and why I'm so passionate about hockey now.
Okay, so before we get to RGV roller, I want to talk about where you live now, because you said ice doesn't freeze. I mean, obviously. So you're basically on the border of Texas and Mexico. So tell me a little bit about McAllen.
Yeah, so I'm on the southern end of Texas, all the way down to the ocean. So I live in McAllen. I work in Brownsville, which is an hour from McAllen to the east. So right on the Gulf of Mexico. It's a beautiful area, bilingual, bicultural, binational. You have people crossing both sides. People, most people speak Spanish. Many people have family in Mexico. So it's just really like sweet spot. It's really comfortable. I think it's really safe. A lot of people hear things about this area that it's unsafe and violence, but you live here, in reality, it's beautiful. It's a really great place. So, I mean, I'm from San Jose. The weather's nice and it's beautiful to look at the mountains, but over here, it really does feel like feels like home. So the town that we play hockey is McAllen. They built a roller hockey rink for whatever reason in 2005. And I was in fifth grade then. And from fifth grade to when we started the organization, it collected dust. There wasn't a ton of hockey there because there was ice hockey. So there wasn't enough hockey to support an ice rink and a roller rink. So McAllen, Texas, a lot of people have to look it up, but it's actually a really growing region. If you combined all of the towns, the population's like 1.5 million, but it's spread out over a large area. McAllen is about 200,000 people. Definitely growing though. We have a medical school now, and it's an area that was underserved for a long time, and it still is in a lot of ways, but economically it's kind of moving forward. So it's a growing area, and it's a very interesting place. Yeah, it really is.
So this rink that was built, was it built as a roller rink or as a roller hockey space?
They built it for roller hockey. So when this team came in 2003,
wild.
It's just crazy. Yeah, I can't. There's actually a guy who's from Toronto, and I have to name drop Craig Lewis. So he's from Toronto. He was a banker. He really wanted hockey to come down here. It didn't. They would play they played in a cotton gin in a town called Harlingen before I was born. They played roller hockey in a cotton gin. Eventually they brought an ice hockey team. So they played in an arena, and then they built an ice rink for the team to practice and public skate and youth and adult leagues. And then they built this roller rink. The city built it. I don't know why. Maybe they thought hockey would just balloon into this big thing. And in the mid-2000s, hockey in Texas, actually, there was a ton of minor league teams around the state. It didn't go that way. People did play in the adult league on ice, but roller hockey didn't really do too much. There's even this story that I have to tell, that me and my mom, we signed up for Learn to Play Roller Hockey with the city, and we signed up and we're super excited. We go to the rink and nobody was there. The city put this in their Parks and Rec book, but nobody was there.
Oh, I guess
the class didn't make, there wasn't enough numbers. So that story really sticks with me because, fast forward 8 to 10 years, we started a hockey program, and now that hockey program has really grown. The ice rink that we had doesn't exist anymore. So anybody that wants to play hockey, they're probably doing it with us. And it's a blessing and a curse. I miss ice rink too. I was hoping, let me play roller hockey so I could eventually play ice hockey. But now we're hockey's last stand in this area in a lot of ways. It's been doing well, but it's crazy. Like it's like stranger than fiction that we're even here, but it's incredible.
It's a great point that you made though, because there have been, I mean, Texas has actually a great hockey history and there have been a lot of, you know, interesting teams rolling through. How did you keep your hockey chops alive? Like, were you actually playing roller hockey the whole way through school or did you just pick it up kind of later?
You know, I mean, people are going to laugh, but I think I always had a good wrist shot, right? Like I would play street hockey. I'd play with my friends. We would take shots on a net with no skates, just on our shoes. I would be shooting, you know, a ball and I'd be stick handling in the house. You got to ask my mom, like I was shooting at like our door had like a window and I would almost break it. And she's like, you can't play hockey inside. So I always liked to stick handle and stuff. And I knew how to skate. I didn't really like play any organized hockey though outside of 5 years old. So when I started playing roller hockey like more seriously, it was rough. I wasn't that good, but it was so fun. I was like, I'm finally getting to play hockey. I'm finally getting to do what I want to do. I knew how to ice skate. I knew how to roller skate, but then I started to learn how to skate backwards and I got better and better. And that's, you know, outside of the organization, my growth has been incredible. Like now I play in the adult league and it's so much fun. Like it's so fun. I did play a little bit of ice hockey before the rink closed. That was even rougher. Like I was falling all over the place, but roller hockey, it feels like that's my spot, that's my skill level. And it's so fun though. I mean, and then we introduced a kids program and that's where, you know, the real joy comes from, being able to share this game with 6-year-olds to 12-year-olds that are, you know, bright eyed, bushy tailed and in love with the game the way I was when I was a kid. So it kind of came full circle in that way.
So, I mean, how was the program itself born? I mean, it's one thing to love it. It's another thing to be like, okay, I want other people to experience this and we're going to do something organized here.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, that's just the way that I'm wired. Like I want to share things with people, right? Like me playing hockey with adults, it was cool, but I looked around and I was like, where's the youth program? Like, what's going on here? Like when I was a kid, there was no youth program. Now I'm an adult. There's still no youth program at this rink that it should be affordable. It should be accessible. It shouldn't be that hard to turn this hockey rink into a hockey rink where there's a thriving hockey program. So the organization, it did take some work, right? We started this nonprofit in 2019. We had all this momentum. We had something called Hockey Fest where we had barbecue and just fun events in January 2020. And of course, COVID did what COVID did. It put us on the sidelines. We had to wait. But in a way, it was good because I think if we just would have rushed into it, there would have been more hiccups. I learned very quickly that it's not as easy as just throwing out some pucks and some sticks. That's how you do like an event night or just like a learn to play interest stuff. But to have an organized league, we had to get our coaches certified. We had to do insurance. We had to start a bank account, start fundraising. And oh my gosh, it was a lot of work. I didn't think it would be so much work, but when I found out it was, I just dove head first. I learned everything I needed to, started a nonprofit, wrote up bylaws and articles of incorporation. Oh my God. I turned into a lawyer for a couple of weeks.
Were you versed in this area at all?
No. I mean, I went to school for journalism. I like to think of myself as a smart person, problem solver, but man, I was in over my head for a little bit. And I mean, I got a good team around me. I asked for help. I mean, some people were good at hockey. Some people were good at community outreach. Some people had a little bit of legal background. So we put our heads together. I did do a lion's share of the work because I just had so much passion for it because I knew that it had potential even before that it really, really took off. And I just wanted this to be here. I felt like our area deserved it. Our area deserved hockey. And it's very different to have a team and try to sell tickets versus trying to give the game to kids, trying to share the game. And I just had so much passion and energy for it. And honestly, a lot of free time during COVID. I mean, I lost like 2 or 3 jobs over people got laid off and I poured a lot of time and energy into it. And we came out on the other side, able to launch in 2021, these like learn to skate clinics with one of the old hockey coaches from the ice rink. And then he moved away. So then we had to build a team of coaches that were willing to get certified. It's easy to say, yeah, I'm down to help, but it's a lot harder to get people that are like dedicated, willing to come to practice. All of those coaches and players, they have kids in the program. I'm the only one that doesn't have a child of my own. I'm the one person that like, I'm doing it because I love it. And I'm just happy to see these kids enjoy it. And in 2022, we launched the program like, we had four teams, we had 35 kids. I thought we'd get to maybe 20 and maybe teams of like six, but we had teams of eight. It was incredible. I mean, we had all the ages mixed up from 6 to 12. So we had to have like a line of big kids and a line of little kids. It was so funny. But then in season two, which was last fall, we were able to add a 6 to 9 year old division. So we had a little kid group and then a big kid group. Mm-hmm. And then this year we grew from 7 to 8 teams. So every season it's grown. So we went from 0 to 60 and like we have 63 kids now. Wow. Most of these kids knew nothing about hockey before, and now they're like diehard hockey fans. Like 3 or 4 of these kids over Christmas break, they asked their parents to go take them to the Dallas Stars game. So we have kids that turned into full-fledged hockey fans, like going to games, you know, practicing in their driveways, practicing with us. A travel team has been created for the elite kids that want to go out and play. So it's incredible. It's like everything I've always wanted. Mm-hmm. And you know, not just for myself, but now I have kids to enjoy it with and share the game with and talk to it with. And the coaches that we have, the board of directors, they all have, you know, a passion and they see the vision, a vision that largely was mine to make sure that this game was accessible and affordable. And we charged low prices, like $45 was our entry fee the first season. And people were like, you mean for a month, right? I'm like, no, that's the whole season. Like, that's really cheap. We should raise the prices. I'm like, why? Like, we want more people in. Like, maybe when we do some more stuff, but we're just giving them a place to play at a rink that's been here. Like, I don't want to, I'm not trying to charge an arm and a leg here. We're trying to grow the sport. And I think that's something that's always been super important to me. And I think that's the big recipe in our success, making sure it's accessible and affordable. And we give away gear when we can. We help with discounts if people need it. Like, we just want people to play. Like, that's the main focus.
I mean, it's such a perfect case study for growing the game. It's just in a nutshell, here it is.
Yeah, I agree.
What are you seeing happen? I mean, when, you know, I think sport in general can just, it just provides so much in such a multifaceted way in terms of team and family and growth and all of that stuff. What are you seeing for these kids who are enrolling?
Yeah, no, I think like what you're saying is really important because you're saying team and growth and family. I played youth sports growing up as well, and it's not always so hunky-dory. We have these leagues becoming these like mini professional factories and talking about scholarship, and it's gross because when I played sports, I was playing to have fun. Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking about being super good. And maybe that's just because I wasn't that good at sports. But I think what's really important is making sure these kids have fun. Right. Are they going to get better? Yes. Is it going to be competitive? Yes. But once they start being like crappy to each other, we have to nip it in the bud right away. I mean, we've seen the issues that professional sports, our sport that we love, hockey, has. We just don't let that fester. We just make sure that these kids are having fun. It's the most positive sports league I've ever been able to witness. I mean, I was an umpire for baseball and, you know, the Boys and Girls Club growing up, and we had parents having to get escorted out because they would be berating the refs. For us, these parents are loving it. These kids are loving it no matter which team they're on. When the game ends, they're all hanging out together. It's not vicious. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here? Like, and I think it's just, it's so new, it's so fresh, it's different. These kids are really loving hockey. These are kids that knew nothing about it, and now they're like, they don't want to get off the rink. They want to be there 7 days a week if they could. They're practicing in their driveways. They're asking me or other coaches, hey, can we go meet up and skate at a park or something? And these kids are really growing to the sport. I mean, yes, they're getting better, but they're making some friendships. And I don't know if we attracted this type of kid, but like, there's a lot of like misfit type of kids that maybe they didn't enjoy the sport, and they're into Dungeons and Dragons, and they're into these random different things. And I just think that, like, in my philosophy, and I've never like read anything on it, but you have to like care about these kids as people. It's not a factory to produce junior players. And I think that's what's a blessing. Like, we're not telling them that they're going to be superstars because we don't have an ice rink. They're not getting scouted. They're just having fun. And I think fun at the forefront is really important. I'm always out there with a smile. ask the kid how their days were, what they enjoy in school. And I think they feel like they're a part of something. And even though they're young, you know, 12 and under for the most part, I think they really realize that it's something special. And the parents definitely do. I think the parents hearing their feedback is so encouraging. There hasn't been like a single kid that doesn't renew. I mean, if they move away, yeah, but every kid has come back. 3 seasons now, they're coming back, they're coming back, they're coming back. They want more hockey. They want hockey in the summer. They want camps. They want travel. Like, they want it to be a big thing. And I think that's what's super gratifying and validating. Because when I started this back in 2020, I was like, I hope somebody comes. I hope it's not two people. I didn't know it would succeed. And once we had that first event where we had like 50 people, you know, kids and adults included, I was like, okay, we might have something here. And that's really played out over the course of a few years. And it's been gradual, but it's been so incredible and so much fun. Like, I spend a lot of time there, but there's no place I'd rather be. It's like, I feel like I'm at home there, even if I'm just watching kids play. Like, it's such a great place. It's a positive atmosphere that we've created.
I just love what you say about, you know, if they're not having fun and it gets, you know, too serious and ultimately kind of aggressive, you've got to nip it in the bud. Mm-hmm. And so that resonates so much with me because I see that environment as also a barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a daughter who, I mean, she's 13 now and she never ended up playing hockey, but part of her hesitation coming up was, oh, if she hadn't started early enough, she wouldn't be good enough. And there just wasn't an environment where she could just have fun and be. It was always about getting to the mm-hmm. next level and you know, being the best. So I love that about this. Listen, I know you don't do this for the accolades, mm-hmm. but you received a very high honor just a few months ago. And that's the Herb Carnegie Trail Blazer Award, one of the yes. inaugural recipients of that. What did that mean to you? I mean, not just to be recognized, but specifically by the Carnegie Foundation themselves.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And, you know, I went to the first Carnegie Summit, which was in Boston, and that is when they retired Willie O'Ree's number. And I was just in a space that was like, it was incredible. I was like crying when I saw his number go up because it was just like being a Black hockey fan, a Latino hockey fan as well, but it was just like such a crazy moment. And to get to learn about the Carnegie family at that first conference. And then when I got that call before the second conference from Bernice and from Bryant McBride, I was just like, you're picking me. Like, you guys are like you guys have laid such a foundation for this. Of course, the late Herb Carnegie and then his daughter. I'm like, you guys are like royalty when it comes to inclusion in hockey. So to be selected, I was just like, whoa. And the things that they say about me and our organization, it's just like, it feels so good to know mm-hmm. that like we're doing the right thing and I'm doing the right thing. And to be honored with that class that was in, you know, honored. It's just like, when I was in Toronto and that was my first time in Canada, I got to the place that I've always wanted to go, the headquarters of hockey. It was just like, I felt like I was exactly where I've always wanted to be. And I guess I was slowly starting to process, like, maybe we do deserve this. Maybe we are, you know, worthy of this honor. And maybe we are doing the right thing. And it was incredibly validating. It was emotional. Like, my whole family was invited, you know, they flew us out, they put us up in a really nice hotel. And it was really special. It was really special. I couldn't keep it together. I was definitely very emotional because I was there with my mom and I've wanted this for so long. I've wanted to be a part of hockey since I was 5. I've watched games, play the video games. Oh, I could be a general manager. I could be a broadcaster. I didn't know what my role would be. And I'm still not working in hockey because this isn't my day job, but I felt like I'm a part of this hockey culture. I'm a part of the scene. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. If you like really care about this, I think you can find your way to make an impact. And we are making an impact and it's really, really special. I never wanted to leave that weekend. It was just like all these people there. And it's not like only they're patting you on the back. They were also talking about best practices and mm-hmm. how to move the game forward and what we could do and what the future can look like. And I think roller hockey can be a big part of it. And I'm like, whoa, maybe we're at the right place at the right time. And maybe we could be a part of this, you know, reckoning that hockey's happening, this rebirth of making hockey fun, because I think we do that down here in the Valley. So, you know, that weekend was incredible. It was like 2 years in a row of the best weekend of my life. That's what I say. Like, Boston was cool, Toronto was cool. I'm putting it on my calendar for year after year because it's great folks that are running it, and we get some meaningful conversation. So I was super happy to be a Herb Carnegie Trailblazer Award winner. It's like, whoa.
Well, you do deserve it. So I hope you are able to see that now. And yeah, I was so sad to miss it. And I'm going to make sure that I block off that weekend for the third edition.
Yeah, we'd love to see you there, because it's cool to see the team send representation, because mm-hmm. if it was just organizers, we'd just be kind of like telling each other what we know, but the teams are listening. You know, it was in Toronto, so the Leafs had some speakers, and it's good to see the team start to look into the world and see where those people are, because it's a lot of work. And I think if people like myself and like Mozin Hasham in Canada, who's a huge mentor of mine, if those folks are like supported and paid for their work and allowed to thrive, I think hockey can go to a really important place and get more people. Like in the Valley where we're at, every single kid, almost every kid is a Latino kid, but it's not like we have to put this like find a Latino kid type of that. These are the kids in our backyard, like this right. is our area. So I'm really excited, and yeah, you got to come. It's some really great folks out there.
You know, it can feel when you're immersed in hockey culture, I sort of say that with quotes, but you know, in the hockey world, that we kind of take a step forward and two steps back. It can feel a bit disheartening sometimes. Does being in a space like that give you ultimate hope?
Yeah. No, I think it really does. And, you know, right before the nonprofit started, I was doing a YouTube channel because I was like, I want to talk about hockey. So I started talking about hockey. And this was like when Akeem Alou's story came to light. And it was just a lot of really dark and depressing things. And those things are still there. But because I feel like I found a space where I'm working in it and able to push forward, and I don't have to like be overtly political on my day-to-day at RGB Roller, I'm just able to work with kids and you know, make sure we have enough pucks and make sure we have refs and we're doing the work, so it you don't feel those steps backwards, because all we're doing is stepping forward, all we're doing is pushing forward. So to go to that event and to see people like happy, it's like, okay, we're able to stop and smell the flowers and realize there are good things going on in hockey. You have to focus on them. You have to look at them, because if you look at only hockey and you're only looking at like the scores of the night and then a scandal comes out, you might be really depressed. But if you look at the grassroots programs and you look at, you know, these participation numbers, and one thing that was interesting, they said in Canada, like elite level hockey is losing participation, but grassroots is gaining participation. So it's just saying, look at the grassroots, look at people that are just putting sticks in hands, and will elite players come out of that? Hopefully. But if you stop focusing on only the elite superstar 24-hour training, there are some really good things. So yes, there's always steps backwards, but the people that are taking step forwards, we're here and we're working hard, and we just want people to realize that it's not all bad. There's people that are spending a lot of time trying to make it really good.
There really are. So Nate, what happens next? What how do you see, you know, the future rolling out, no pun intended, really, for RGB Roller? What do you want?
Yeah, so I think it's tough, because I'm not really sure. Like, I just want our program to thrive. I want hockey in our area to continue to be something that people are able to do. It was looking kind of grim when that ice rink closed. It was looking like there wasn't going to be a place to play. And now there is. And I think roller hockey, I just want roller hockey to be a big deal, because, you know, we want hockey to grow. We're doing ball hockey, we're doing deck hockey, and then we're doing these learn to play ice programs, and there's this gap in the middle. And there can be skates. Like, it doesn't have to be only floor, and it can't always be ice. And I think roller hockey, it's right there. I mean, if you have a kid who comes to our program and they say, how do I get involved? Well, you can go to Target or Walmart or, you know, Canadian Tire Academy, and you can get roller skates for $30, $40. And then you're playing hockey. Yes, you could get the Bauer skates after a year or two, but to the barrier of entry, I think, is pretty low. And I want roller hockey to kind of get a little bit more of the market share, because if you only care about the dollars and cents of the sport, we're spending money on gear. I have a helmet, I have gloves, I have shin pads. We still have to purchase this gear. We're contributing to the hockey economy. I just want people to realize that roller hockey is pretty cool. Like, I didn't know much about roller hockey till I got involved. And now that I'm doing it, I'm like, whoa, like, this is cool. I want more people to do it. As far as our organization, I just want there to be more kids playing, more adults playing. I want to become a bigger deal here in the Valley. And I try not to be too direct about it, but I would love to make this my day job. I'd love to get paid to do this, and not just because I want some cash, but if we were able to be like an employer, right? Like, if we were able to not just Nate gets paid, but like pay coaches, pay refs, pay, like, I like to compare it to like the lifeguards. Like, there's like a junior lifeguard, like you're 15, 16 year old, you're getting your first paycheck. We have kids that could teach how to skate classes. Right. Could I do it all? Of course not. There's just so many different things, but I just want our group to be able to be sustainable and be able to be here for the long term, because just like our minor hockey program, it had its up moments. We had a couple sold out stadiums, sold out arenas, but it didn't stick around for more than 10 years. And I want to be here for the long term. I don't want it to be a flash in the pan. You know, I'm grateful for the award, but I don't want it to be an award, look what they're doing, and then bye. Like, I want like communication with clubs, with the league, with hockey manufacturers to realize we have to invest in the grassroots of hockey. And it can't only be ice and please keep doing ball hockey and deck hockey, but look what roller hockey is doing. Because you're still learning how to play. You're learning how to skate. A fast skater, a talented skater, still can rise to the top of a league. Because I've heard the complaint that, oh, well, ball hockey is too far away from ice hockey. And sure. And I want to be that middle ground. And I don't want to have to pick between, okay, are we only going to support grassroots ice where we give away gear, or only going to build deck hockey rinks? Like, I would love all three, because you know, I don't think we are in the position to be picky and choosy about how we grow hockey, because we just need to grow it. I mean, we need the sport to have a little bit more, you know, coolness to it. And I think roller hockey, it's really fun. I mean, you don't have to buy as much gear, but it's like you're rolling around. Roller skating, rollerblading used to be big. I know that it was a big deal, and I just want it to come back and be kind of like hip and cool, because, I mean, I have a blast doing it, and a lot of our kids do. And if anyone's an indicator of how the future is going to go, it's the kids. And the kids are loving it.
And it, I mean, unlike ice hockey, it can happen anywhere. And I think, I mean, that's just, you know, the light bulb has to go off at some point. Like, oh, okay.
I think so. I think it will. I really want it to. Yeah, for sure.
Well, Nate, I can't thank you enough for your time, and thank you for everything you do in the game. And I really hope to meet you in person one day.
Yes, I hope so too. I mean, Toronto is an option, but I always try to come back and visit my family in San Jose. And I want to thank you for what you do with the Sharks and with NBC Sportsnet. You know, I watch all the broadcasts, and it's refreshing to get, you know, a different point of view, but also someone that has a passion for, you know, the grassroots and, you know, hometown hockey. I mean, that's cool stuff. And, you know, I've been, you know, listening and doing my own research, and you do some important work. And I think that, you know, San Jose has always been a model franchise, and I think you're a huge part of that now. So we as Sharks fans are lucky to have you. So thank you so much.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, Nate.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll be in touch. Don't be a stranger.
Absolutely. Thanks so much to Nate for spending time with me and having that conversation. Thanks to you for listening. The weather's getting warmer, but we're still going to keep talking hockey. So I will be back with you next week for another edition of The Undercurrent. In the meantime, keep your fins above water.